Hey there, and welcome to a kind of holiday edition of Amazing FBA and 10K Collective Podcasts. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Today, I'm going to introduce, with great pride, another one of the podcasts from the E-Commerce Leader podcast, which is a fairly new podcast that's been going since about May 2020. And I've been doing that with my co-host, Jason Miles, Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor and top 1% Shopify seller. So a man who knows his stuff. He's also a very, very clear-minded thinker about business problems. And today we're going to talk about e-commerce profit strategies. Some of this stuff is broader than Amazon. I think that's a very healthy thing for Amazon sellers, so quote unquote, to think about, because in fact, we need to stop labeling ourselves in that way. And I have a habit of saying that, and think of ourselves more as e-commerce operators who use Amazon as a sales channel. Now, there's a lot of things around profit that are true for any small business owner, but particularly important things, the areas that can be made in Amazon that I see a lot. We share a bit of our worst profit mistakes and the importance of measuring tools and some of the biggest cash drains and how to change that relationship with profit as well, so you prioritize it more and it doesn't just get beholden. You don't just get beholden to that great, the mighty revenue number that everyone talks about all the time, but how to make profit a priority in your business. Very practical, very important stuff that we discussed today. Hope you find it fun, and more importantly, that it helps you get your business on track to be even more profitable. Thanks in advance for listening. We are Michael Veazey in London, England.
Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
More importantly, you are the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be. We're here to get you there. For show notes with links and resources mentioned today, and for other juicy resources like downloads and free mini courses, just visit our blog, theecommerceleader.com. Mr. Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, actually. I mean, I have to say that lockdown in London, although it's pretty grim for the people who are suffering, and it's actually pretty good for me. I'm working really hard at home and seeing more of my wife than I usually do, going for more walks than I usually do.
Yeah.
So how's life with you in Seattle?
Yeah, same thing. We're actually remodeling our downstairs area to get more work at home flow in the, you know, in the house. And we've all kind of figured out our system. I have three college age kids who are all here with us, working for us.
Oh, wow.
And one is still currently in college as we speak. So she's trying to figure that out. We had to rescue her from Southern California a few weeks back, but we're surviving and we're healthy. And so, you know, who can complain? Right? Not us. And we've got a lot of good things happening, and we've got an opportunity to talk about some good topics today. So
absolutely. Yeah. Some great topics. So strategies for profit. Profits, incredibly important word. Everyone talks about it, but then a lot of people don't actually have it. So it's one of your most passionate topics, I know. Why is it that you're so passionate about this topic then?
Yeah. I think the reality for me was that we started our e-commerce work as a side hustle. And I was working full time and had a great job. I was, you know, ultimately when I retired from 9-to-5 work, I was senior VP as marketing at a university. And so the side hustle piece for us, we went through over the course of 5 years, we went through episodes in our life where we really needed the money. And then we went through episodes of our life where we didn't need the money. And in that 5 year period where it was a side hustle for me, evenings and weekends, I think what I got the vision. I drank the Kool-Aid and really, really wanted the laptop lifestyle, I guess you could say, or just the freedom that comes with, having your own business. And over that course of time, I was literally for the last 4 years before I retired from it, I was commuting 3 hours a day just to get to the work. But it was a good job, you know, but that time in my life and those dynamics just made me realize profit, net profit, profit from the e-commerce work that we put in our checking account is preeminent. I mean, it is the number one thing. It's why we're all in business. And I know a lot of times people get confused, like, why am I doing this? Well, I hate my boss, so I want something else. Or I feel insecure about my incomes and I want something else. Or, you know, I want the prestige of knowing I'm saying I'm an entrepreneur, but the bottom line, at least for me and our household, is putting money in our checking account is number one. And, you know, that's why I think I'm just super passionate about this. And I've worked with now a lot of clients who will go through various stages of profitability or not being not profitable, and have just come to the conclusion that they're just tricks of the trade, strategies, tactics, things to work through that really can make a huge difference. And I'm just, that's it. I mean, I could go on and on, obviously, as you can tell, but
well, that's really important.
I'm passionate about this topic. So
yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that's great. I think one of the things I think is great about being passionate about profit is because in internet marketing generally, and in the Amazon space anyway, particularly, there is a lot of passion about sales and growth.
Right.
And it's kind of obvious thing to say, but it's only by sort of calming down and thinking, well, what am I not hearing about here, that you suddenly realize how out of whack that picture is. Because we don't hear people banging on about their profit every time they go into a room of entrepreneurs. Say, yeah, I made 80,000 profit last month. I made $180,000 in net and sales.
Yeah.
And growth in sales. And we've grown 200%. What does that growth mean? It means you've grown in revenue 200%. It may be that your profit has gone down, and people don't tend to talk in those terms, right? So it sounds like an obvious thing to talk about, but it's very neglected in the corner in the Amazon world. Would you say that's true for your, you know, Shopify or other base, you know, home?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we've all been in the Facebook groups where the noobs like to post their, you know, hey, look what I made my first $1,000, or I made my first, you know, $10,000, or I made my first $30,000 in a month. And I don't dislike those posts, because it is a point of pride for people, and it is an opportunity to celebrate and get, and a lot of times entrepreneurship can be lonely. So it's not that I don't like those posts, but there's just a huge subtext that goes unspoken when in those Facebook groups people do that, which of course is that has nothing to do with whether you're, you know, actually profitable. And so to me, that's where the real, I guess, American phrase, I don't know, the rubber hits the road. It's the real truth of the matter is, you know, what's it look like? And so for, you know, for our journey, we became focused on the issue of net profit, and I was able to retire from 9 to 5 and replace our incomes. And I'm happy to say we make now more money now than we ever have in our life. And we manage our net profit. We manage how much we take out of our business for tax purposes and strategic thinking and, you know, kind of growth of the business. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different lifestyle and place to be financially than being in a side hustle where you're posting about your first $1,000 of, you know, sales that you made on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I just to clarify a couple points, when I say profit, from a small business, I mean what you put in your checking account.
I was going to ask you about that. I'm glad you raised that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I just use the word, you know, sales to talk about your top line, you know, e-commerce transactions, sales on any platform. And then I use the word profit to mean what you actually owners draw, if it's an LLC structure, or, you know, if you're LLC and you get to a certain point, you have W-2 income in the United States, plus owners draw money. If you're structured differently, you have different methods of taking money out of the business. But that's what I mean by profit. It's just what you've personally, you know, taken out.
Okay, that's an interesting point, because I think that's one of those points that's worth digging into, because I know that Greg Crabtree, who's got a very complicated book title, but very, very good book. It's called something like Simple Numbers, Straight Talk, Big Profits. And he's a CPA, so an accountant in the US. And I know you know what a CPA is. Any British listeners might be scratching their heads. He's very into differentiating between the owner's drawings versus the profit in the business. Because he says, look, first of all, you get two scenarios. And I see a lot of this in the Amazon business world. Yep. So let's dig into this. The first scenario is you get... the business looks like it's making a profit, but once you take any reasonable owner's salary out of it, it's not.
Right.
But they're not taking anything, so it looks like it's profitable. And the other extreme, of course, is taking all the money out of the business and killing it. So what are your thoughts around that differentiation between the profit retained in the business versus the owner's drawings?
That's a profitability sophomore level coursework. Step one, make money. that is profit. Step two, decide how to strategically use it. And okay, so what he's speaking to is sort of the nuance of, once you actually have a profitable e-commerce operation, then how do you clarify because, as I just mentioned, we manage our profit that we personally take out of the business. Implied in that comment is what he's talking about, which is you do want to think through how much you want to take as owner's draws or personal, you know, income versus how much you want to use strategically inside the business to grow, to acquire, you know, new goods or, you know, assets, et cetera, build a balance sheet of the business. So yeah, I totally agree with his perspective. And I guess I should say that in the UK, a certified public accountant, CPA, is the designation in the United States that people use for a licensed, you know, accountant. What's your phrase in
the UK? We call it a chartered accountant, which is very similar. Okay. It sounds a bit like the king gave them a charter in 1300, which is the weird way Britain works is probably true. It's a strange place. It's an eccentric place. But the principle's the same. And again, yes, you have, in terms of, we can actually have legally limited partnerships now, which is a sort of vehicle, a company structure, if you like, or business structure we've inherited from the States. But most of the time, it's going to be a limited company. So we don't have Inc. versus S Corp versus C Corp and all that complicated difference that you get. It's basically private limited company, probably a limited company if you're on the stock market. So that's not really open to most of us. And then partnership, which is basically like a sole trader, only you're responsible for your partner's debts, which is even worse. And then there's LLP, legally limited partnership, which is kind of, I've not seen anybody use it for e-commerce actually. So basically it's one size fits all in UK, which is limited company. And yes, then you can do things like you can take dividends to a certain point at a pretty low tax. I think it's currently 7%. I can't see that staying that low, especially after the government's got to pay all the debt back for the COVID-19 thing for the next 20 years. But anyways, and then you take salaries, and there are various things you should do with your accountant. But I like coming back to your very fundamental point, a good reality check. First, make any kind of spare profit in the business, and then secondly, worry about how you divide it. That I like the reality check, so thank you for bringing that up. So that brings me to another question then about what your clients do, and we can sort of share notes on clients really and what they do, because they vary wildly in the Amazon world that I know, even some otherwise smart people. Profit is a bit of an afterthought for some of them, but let's start with the good things. What do your profitable clients do best, would you say?
Yeah, they have a profit and loss statement, and they run their business based on financial oversight and thinking. They say they use tools to understand where they're at financially, and they've, you know, the profit and loss statement that is we teach, and most of them, you know, the profitable ones have already done this. And that is, they have a monthly profit and loss statement that they build, and then that rolls up to quarterly and then annual. And you have to do this work anyway when you do your taxes once a year. Some people wait and don't do any of this stuff and then sort it out one time a year. And so the profitable operators, they're pretty dialed in on that stuff, and they have teams of people who help them do a bookkeeping and that kind of thing. And they've just, over the course of time, maybe because of their emotional need for it, or their business training previous, they've developed some tools and some rigor around their thinking and management of the funds. And I think that's the first principle, is actually knowing your numbers and having them sorted in such a way that you understand, you have visibility into profit, and you're not just working off of a checking account or that kind of thing as your source of truth, you know. And so I think that's the first principle. And then there are many other principles. Everybody is inclined to either be a frugal person or a thrifty person or a spender, and a roll the dice type gambler. There's a spectrum of people's behaviors that you'll see. But the people who are profitable understand their own thinking about money, and they've made games for themselves that help them win, if you know what I mean. I mean, they've rigged their own little world so that they avoid their own stupidity, and they've set it up so that they find a way to be successful financially, you know.
That makes a lot of sense. I've been rereading the book, The E-Myth
Revisited, which isn't E, is nothing to do with e-commerce, but it's about the entrepreneurial myth. And one of the things he talks about is setting a game for your employees. But I think what's included in that is a business owner is it's important you have your own game that you play. So you set up a game you can win. But as you say, taking account of yourself. And I think that's very wise. I mean, that's one of the characteristics of entrepreneurs that I know is that most of them hate bookkeeping, and the smart ones recognize that and just hire a bookkeeper.
Right.
It's kind of simple, right? But a lot of us are pretty spotty on that.
So what you're in the Amazon space more. I know in Amazon, there's just a different universe for cost of goods. You got to get your inventory. You got to get, you know, you're baited into large inventory purchases, taking bets on inventory. Then you're baited into financing your inventory. And then you're baited into putting all your profit back into inventory. Mm-hmm. These are just the breadcrumbs from Hansel and Gretel are leading you to the oven type thing in my mind. do you see? Like, what do you see?
Success? Hansel and Gretel is an interesting one. What do I see? I think you just described it. I see a lot of that with my clients. I mean, they really fall into two halves a bit. I mean, some people are really aggressively growing, and sometimes they're really smart, and they do a lot of, you see that the people I work with aren't dumb. Like sometimes they're too smart. Sure. They create spreadsheets that do cash flow analysis and mean their business can run and survive, but it's not really making any profit, and they're not taking any money out of it. So it's kind of a fruitless endeavor for them. It's very fruitful for Amazon and for their customers because the good ones produce great products and deliver well. So somebody's benefiting. It's the customers.
Jeff Bezos Amazon. Is doing
Jeff
well.
Jeff is very happy. But the clients themselves, I remember in the mastermind meeting back in September 2019, back in the old days before COVID. And I remember saying to one guy, we had a 2-day mastermind for once, normally one day. Once a month, and I said, please come back with a version of that spreadsheet you just created that actually shows you making some profit, because I'm concerned, and also I feel for you because I know you're working really hard, and I knew him well by this point. I could be that frank and say, you're working really hard, but you're not getting the benefits for this.
Did he take that feedback?
He did. He came straight back with a spreadsheet where he chopped about 4% off his cost by reducing the ad spend, and Amazon ads are great way of spending your spare money. Again, Jeff will be very happy about that because it's cash flow.
That's right. Yeah.
And what else? He just trimmed a few costs and he just doubled the profit that fell out the end of his model. This is on paper, but even on paper, he was planning to not make a profit effectively and was okay with that. And I was just nervous about that. And also I felt like you've been building this for 3 years. You should start to be able to take some kind of owner salary at this point,
When that voice of reason was shared with him and you encouraged him to do that, that's the fascinating part about this to me. He was able to immediately go do that. It's like you just, you give somebody the hint of the right direction. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of times, because of the volume at which we have our clients are selling our e-commerce businesses, little hinges, swing big doors, as they say.
They really
and
do.
If you can cut something or change something, there's so many cases where I have horror stories of our own business where we've just, we've realized we've just wasted and wasted and wasted money. And it's like, you waste a lot of money in 1 month, you'd think, well, that should be a lesson learned. But if you do it for a whole year, you're like, what in the world have I been doing? How did we just blow $30,000 unneeded unnecessarily because we just didn't think through it's an interesting story you share. Other thoughts or lessons from your community or clients or
There are other people who are very aggressively going for growth. And I don't think most people in the Amazon space are aiming for kind of steady state or gentle growth, because they're probably right to go for aggressive growth because the marketplace is growing, and therefore you'll lose market share and all sorts of bad things happen then. And all sorts of great things happen when you own market share. So I'm a big, big believer in the STAR principle, which is particularly relevant in Amazon, which is Richard Koch's book, which is basically...
What's the STAR principle? How does
the
it
STAR
work?
Principle is that the Boston Consulting Group, 2x2 Matrix, beloved of all management consultants. So basically find a market that's growing more than 10% a year, which on Amazon is a joke. At least it has been. We'll see what happens, but I think it will be in some cases even more extreme. And then make sure you're the number one seller in that market, meaning by market share, i.e. you have more revenue than, preferably twice as much revenue than anyone else, which is where I think revenue is a relevant number, by the way. It's not about how big you are and how great you are. It's like how small you are relative to the rest of the niche that you're in. Yeah. And so I've noticed that, so, you know, growth, aggressive growth is a necessity. So then the question is, how does profit look in that area and in that sort of model? And actually the good businesses have got a tight control on their numbers and they do have profit fallout. They do reinvest most of it, but they have a certain amount they're coming out on owner's drawings and a certain amount that's kept in the business. So they have a bit more of a balance. It's aggressive, but it's tweaked a bit more towards the profit than some of the people who are just kind of growing and praying, you know.
In your community, do you have people who are super strong advocates against leverage finance, you know, borrowing, loan, taking loans? And or is everybody on board with that train? I mean,
it's an interesting question. There's one business that's run more conservatively, but he has to, because I mean, the characteristics of that business that isn't so great is he got like 30 staff and a turnover around the £1 million mark. So that's pretty, you know, that's a very high overhead right now. I'd imagine he's going to be suffering. But he did come back onto that very point. He came back having listened to a lot of discussions where a lot of people talk about how they're leveraging credit cards and debt from the bank and every, you know, loaded up to the hilt with debt, which is very common in the Amazon space. I don't know if it is in Shopify. And he looked at the organic growth that he could achieve from profits and actually came to a pretty big number. I don't remember. It was certainly in eight figures within about 4 years. So he would took the opposite approach, which is that's look at what this business will throw out in profit. Let's look at what growth rate that gives me and then project forward and see that you still end up with a nice big number, maybe just a bit more slowly.
Yeah. I think that whole issue, so let's do this. Let's put a note in our little list here that topic of leverage in your business using debt to grow, that's a whole topic, man. I mean, that's a fantastic topic. So we should definitely set that aside maybe and just go deep into that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there's pros and cons each way. It's, you know, there's advocates who are smart, who are on both sides of the conversation. So yeah, I love that one. Well, so this is sort of basic beginning to profit strategies. Anything else we haven't touched on? What else should we cover real quick in this one before we move on? Wow. I love this topic, of course.
Yeah, that's your favorite passion, that thing. I think we should confess some mistakes, as I think it's good to not just talk in theory. Yeah, I will. I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours, as they say behind the bike set in the UK.
it's painful, isn't it, to realize that you've messed up. And I think the biggest mistake that we have made personally, and the biggest mistake I've seen clients make, the biggest way to zero out your profit is to over advertise unnecessarily, to give the money to Facebook ads, give it to AMS, give it to, you know, whatever, Pinterest promoted pins, on and on, you know, every platform. Those platforms all have ad based systems for a reason. And it obviously juices revenue. Or top line sales, if you do it right. But sometimes it doesn't even do that, you know. So it's like, we've had examples where, and you know, you can double down on this error by hiring people who then manage the ads for you. And so that whole system of selling is one that we've gone down that path. We have spent plenty of money with good people who are paid to make ads work for us. And we've turned those on and turned those off and gone through that whole site life cycle repeatedly. You know, I've done this now for 12 years. So, I mean, I've drank the Kool-Aid and I've heard the pitch and I've seen how much money somebody can make for me and gone through the whole cycle multiple times. So I think that's our biggest mistake. Because the question over time is what can you achieve with organic strategies versus paid. And of course we all, you know, the system you just described on Amazon and the star system where you want to be number one in a fast growing market, it highly encourages you to advertise your way to the top. And if you can do that and it works, it's great. And I've done, I effectively use advertising. I, for our charity, as example, have a charity ad grant from Google, and it's $40,000 a month that I get to spend. So it's not as if I'm not a proponent of advertising, but when it comes to profitability, that's the best way to flush it all right out of the profit and loss statement.
That's so interesting to hear you say that. And thank you for your candor. Well, let me be equally candid that the mistakes that I made, particularly early on in Amazon, but I've done it every so often, even within the Amazing FBA business as well, which is not a product-based business, but yeah, business is business. And it's the same thing as overspending on advertising, particularly badly done advertising. And I have to say that's an absolutely classic mistake that pretty much all people who've got a small business that come to me to try and grow it, and they're trying to go, they're the sort of people who are really struggling to get out of the starting blocks. They're kind of semi-started. Mm-hmm. There's one way of defining a startup, can't remember, which is that when it reaches profitability, it's no longer a startup, which is an interesting metric, right? Because by that metric, quite a lot of Amazon businesses are not out of startup mode yet.
Yeah.
And there's something to that because they're not really sustainable yet. Yeah. But anyway, that's the classic thing. I look at their ad spend and I go, wow, okay, so this isn't working. Now, to your point, I'm really glad you raised that because I'm pretty passionate about the star principle. But here's the thing. A star business, which is to say it's in a high growth market and you are the market leader, the investment strategy is invest, 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 which, by the way, can link in with borrowing heavily, which is another discussion. So those overlap, right? It gets complex.
Yeah.
But it often more hopefully means you take money from the cash cows, the things that are steadily producing cash but don't have a great, you know, trajectory ahead of them, and reinvest that in the stars. However, the classic mistake I see is treating a Me Too product, which is never going to dominate a niche because either the niche is way too big or you haven't got anything like enough capital, or it's frankly a boring old same as everyone else product, which is so classic with the Amazon pure private label play, right? So you just slap a logo on an existing product, which I don't advise people to do now unless it's a starting point to learn the system. But if that's you, then nothing's going to rescue you, and chucking advertising money at it is a disaster. So
what you're describing is, and this is, I think, an important point. When you become an e-commerce entrepreneur, you're actually signing up for about four or five core trade skills that you have to become a professional at. And advertising is absolutely one of them. And so it's so easy to, you know, everybody thinks they're a professional marketer until they're the ones responsible for the marketing. And then they realize, so professional marketing, of course, is a strategic game of a whole dance of things. And that's why Nine Mountains of Traffic is our, you know, that whole topic is there's a whole collection of things that are organic. And then a collection of things that are paid, and professionalism in that space is just what it's just by default what you're signing up for if you want to scale, or building a team of professionals in that, you know, that trade skill. And so I think that's a key lesson for a lot of new folks, is that they will have to go through the painful mistakes to learn their lessons the hard way to become a professional marketer. If they're going to scale. Now, you know, Amazon does so much for Amazon sellers. You don't really realize many times what's actually occurring on the Amazon side of the ledger. But one of the things they do is get all of the visitors, of course. I mean, that's what they're amazing at. And I think that's a key point.
Yeah, it is. By the way, the phrase organic, I mean, as a way of differentiating between paid and organic traffic strategies, is a very meaningful phrase. But what interests me is, another way of putting organic market growth is to create a positive feedback loop, I guess, which is to say that whether you're spending money on ads or hiring writers to do Google SEO, whatever it is, that you end up, you put money into the system, it throws out a profit, and then you can reinvest that. And then it cycles up. In other words, it's coming back to that strategy that client of mine was talking about, which is growing a business organically based on reinvesting some of the profits. But you can do that very specifically in a very microcosm way with very particular products on Amazon that can very quickly ramp up the charts. Right. And that's how you get those sudden overnight successes on Amazon, I think.
And the terminal concept and the speed at which you can scale an ad-based system is so alluring. But it's not to say that there's not a way to to grow quickly organic-based strategies. Obviously, the terminal concept for organic-based growth is called virality. It's a viral campaign is the terminal speed, is like terminal velocity for an organic approach. And understanding the difference between those two models, where you're not paying for it, you've gotten it rigged in such a way that it's growing of its own device, is genius level marketing. And so that's a whole different topic. But and but those things go into profitability, I guess, is our point here. So
yeah, they do. I mean, we're sort of bashing around the point of profitability, but I but you know, to the point that you made about advertising sucking up the spare cash, absolutely. And let's not kid ourselves that these platforms are designed that way, and I don't have anything against them, but Amazon needs to make cash, Google needs to make cash, and that's all it makes cash from. Facebook, YouTube, I mean, that is their revenue, is advertising. So of course they make it seductive and gamify it and get you to focus on the top line rather than the bottom line. So I think
just one last comment on that one before we walk away from it. But the opposite of that, I do have clients come into our coaching practice, and one of the first things I ask them to calculate is their total advertising cost. And then they'll say, well, I don't spend any money. And I say, well, what's your AMS account ad spend? And they're like, oh, well, that's different. That's an Amazon. I'm like, no, that's advertising. So then we kind of parse it out and we figure out what their advertising spend is as a portion or percentage of their top line revenue. Mm-hmm. And I always encourage people that should probably, for healthy business, be between like 8% and 14%.
It's funny, those are the exact numbers I was thinking.
Is that right?
Yeah. Exactly. Because I had a client, that client I was talking about, by the way, he came along with a spreadsheet that even on paper showed a 4% profit. And I said, go and do something about your ad spend, which is 14% of revenue, which is really high. Plus, he had over high overheads because he was a bit ambitious with team building relative to the revenue of the business. And there are other complications. Yeah. But basically, the next day, he came back with something where he chopped it down to 10%. And of course, he doubled the profit of the business.
Right.
Just to the stroke, which goes to your point of, you know, that's where a lot of your money gets sucked up. You've got to have advertising, but it's got to be, you know, managed. Trimmed. Yeah, managed.
Managed.
By the way, one thing I wanted to tee up, because you talked about the tools that help create profitability. I just wanted to say that we're going to be deep diving in that. I'm not going to let you get away with that one. I'm like, we need tools for profitability. I want to know what they are. We're online marketers. We're addicted to tools. And my final question then to you, because this is your, you know, your baby, this topic, what is it you think? We talked about some of the sort of tactical level stuff that can lead into, you know, a lack of profit and some mindset stuff. We've touched on that. But what do you think is the structural thing in the business that drives profit or loss? Do you think it's about the structural thing, or is it more just about the owner's mindset?
Oh, no, it's definitely, I mean, the business model you're operating is like, it's like the car you're driving. Okay. And so I think that, so this tees up a fantastic whole, let's do a whole episode on this one. In fact, maybe this is a good place for a pause and we jump into section two of this, because the business models that you run with and you learn how to operate are, it basically gives you the gearbox to tell you whether you get to go 10 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour or 120 miles an hour. And I think that's the thing to really understand when you get into e-commerce is, what are you doing? You know, it's like, what business are you running?
What business are you in? Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
No, and it sounds that existential crisis is actually something that people don't have enough of, actually. That they kind of just do stuff. They don't even aware of the fact that they don't have a business model or don't understand what it is. So yeah, definitely an interesting topic. And I love, by the way, if you were pitching me a course, I'd be getting my credit card out. And I love the car metaphor, because I happen to like cars, and I love the fact that you got the gears that determine you're going 10 miles an hour, 120. So looking forward to that episode. Sounds really exciting.
Okay, let's do it, man. Let's do it. That'll be a great one. Business models. Fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, so that one's coming up. Folks, if you're listening up, but for now, just say thank you very much, man. Very, very interesting as ever to talk this stuff.
Likewise. Yeah.
That was the E-Commerce Leader podcast with Michael Veazey in London, England.
And Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
We offer you free help on our website, including PDFs, videos, and mini courses on topics like traffic, product, and sales channels. Some are for Amazon, most are for any sales channel. To get those and to stay up to date with our podcasts, go to www.theecommerceleader.com. Thanks for listening.